Hello and welcome back to Helen. Is this number five, isn't it? Episode five?
Yes,
it is five, isn't it? Yeah, episode five of season four of the Burgess Salmon Pensions Pod. And I'm Chris Brown, director in the pensions team here at Burgess Salmon, and joined as usual by Helen Norman. Helen, hi.
Hi.
Good to introduce you by a different name.
Yes, hopefully everyone. I was Helen Cracknell, but now Helen Norman.
Yeah, congratulations. So great news for Helen. And we're joined today by Emma Moore, an associate partner who heads up Aon's Bristol Trustee Retirement Team. Hi, Emma, nice to have you with us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Hi, our pleasure. And I've been really looking forward to this episode. We're talking about the gender pensions gap. It refers to the differences in retirement outcomes for men and women. And there's been lots of commentary, lots of sort of publications and lots of awareness about it ramping up, particularly over the last year, I think, because it's a lot bigger than the pay gap, isn't it? But we'll come on to why that is and reasons why that is and why it's important and what can be done about it. So, Emma, I think as a first question, perhaps you could tell us what exactly is the gender pensions gap?
Yeah, sure. I'm hoping that both of you have heard of the gender pay gap.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
That's something that UK firms are required to by law to report on. Essentially, the gender pensions gap is an extension of that. Laura Trott, the previous pensions minister, had suggested that there may be a standard definition and some sort of reporting at some point, but currently there's actually no set definition of the gender pensions gap and how to calculate it. But as you said, Chris, it is essentially it's the difference in retirement outcomes between men and women. And unfortunately, it doesn't paint the prettiest of pictures. The DWP did some research in 2023. Yeah. We suggested that on average, that gap is about 35%. There's a 35% difference in the pension outcomes between men and women.
And yeah, that starts very early on in women's career as well, doesn't it? I saw that in DWP's report.
It does. It's typically that it's not too bad at the younger ages. And then as we see women going off and typically, having children and things like that. And we'll look at the factors, I guess, in a minute. But it does increase in line with age, which is what we see with the gender pay gap as well.
Do you have stats there, Emma, for what that looks like in pounds and pence terms? So 35% bigger. Do you have any figures for men and women as at, say, coming up to retirement or something like that?
So I don't have any figures for at retirement, but I do. So sort of the female median auto-enrollment eligible employee, they apparently are saving about £510 a year less than the equivalent male.
Right. Okay.
And actually, when you look at, I think it's savers that have just defined contribution benefits, that gap is even bigger. So that I think that the gender pension gap was up to 60% for those members. So it's some pretty huge numbers that feels to me like it's a massive issue. And as you say, I think there is more awareness and it's been talked about a bit more this year, but a lot of people won't even be aware of it, let alone understand how we go about doing anything to address it.
Yeah, agree. Despite the commentary and more awareness of it, there needs to be more. And I'm sure that's one thing we'll come on to at the end of the podcast, to sort of next steps and ideas to take forward. Yeah. And you mentioned there's different ways of measuring it. Can you tell us a bit about what those different ways are, sort of in headline terms? I suppose I'm sort of thinking like you could look at income maybe or overall wealth or perhaps some other things as well.
Yeah, and typically this depends on the information that we have. So we do analyse and calculate those gender pension gaps. Sometimes you just have to look at, members' pension pots at the current time. Or what we can also do is we can project those up to when we think the member will retire, and then we can compare the differences and look at it, break it down into lots of different categories as well. So it gives us a really thorough look at different areas that might be having different impacts.
Emma, you mentioned factors earlier. Why do you think the gender pensions gap is so much more than the gender pay gap?
So, I mean, salary obviously does have an impact. If you're getting, if you're being paid lower than if females being paid lower than men, then you're going to be contributing based on a lower salary. So your contributions will be lower. So similar to the gender pay gap, that will have an impact. But so it's basically doubled the gender pay gap. So half of the factors are not related to pay.
Mm-hmm.
So the other half, typically we're seeing contribution rates. So typically women save less for retirement. And actually we see a higher proportion not saving anything for retirement than men. And then the other one.
Why is that? Just sort of jumping ahead to what we were planning to talk about. Why is that, do you think?
I think that's two parts, and I guess it kind of covers some of this. So career breaks is a big one.
Yeah.
So, you know, if people are taking career breaks, then they are unlikely to be contributing to their pension while they're not at work. Also, if you move to part-time, and we do see, so typically women are taking on more of those carer responsibilities. You know, we've seen that in the past. Doing more childcare might take time off for maternity leave, and also for, you know, parents and other caring roles. We also see more women are part-time. And actually, if you're part-time, then obviously you have, you know, your contributions are paid on a proportion of that full-time salary. So again, those contributions are going to be lower. And you might, because of all of that, actually just have less spare income to be able to pay, you know, pay either the amount that you, you know, you want to be paying or slightly higher into your pension scheme. So I think that's one reason. And the other reason, which is actually quite an interesting one to understand, is that I think women are typically a bit more risk averse.
I was going to ask you both about this.
I did see that in quite a lot of the literature.
Yeah.
How interesting. Yeah, go on.
And so we see that on the contribution side. And I think, you know, maybe women feel unsure about putting that money away, because essentially you're locking it away and you can't get that to retirement. So that's something that, I can understand why people feel a bit, you know, unsure about doing that. We also see it on the investment side as well, actually, that, you know, women want to invest in some, you know, typically invest in the lower risk assets, which, you know, I can see the reasons for that. But I guess that's another reason why making sure you've got the right default investment arrangements is really important, and making sure that that covers and is suitable for everyone in the pension scheme. Yeah, so we see it from that side. I think it's those two factors together which, you know, exacerbate that gender pension gap even further.
I don't have the statistics here, but I definitely have read before that there's such a high percentage of people who just stay in the default of their, for example, DC pension fund.
Yeah.
And as you're right, it just needs to be beneficial for everyone, because that could be all that people are in.
Yeah, agree. And I mean, you know, I am in my default investment fund, you know, working in pensions all the time. I think they know what they're doing. You know, so I think a few move outside of that. But yeah, I think we just need to make sure that that is suitable. And similarly, the language that's used, whether it's in the investments or contributions and communications, we found that actually language, it can, you know, men and women can understand the language differently. And actually looking at your communications from like a D&I lens and thinking about the words that are being used, whether that's for the investment funds that they're in or for the contributions or things like that, that can impact how people take actions.
Yeah.
So there's quite a bit that can be done in a lot of different areas then to help improve sort of approach to saving and financial confidence and all sorts, probably for both men and women, but for women to help improve the gender pensions gap. What about things like women tend to live longer, don't they? So does that, or that's what statistics show? Yeah. So I suppose that feeds into, if you're measuring how much pension you need by how long you're going to live in retirement, then I suppose that puts women in a worse position as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think women start off on the back foot, you know, in the nicest possible way, because
they're going to live longer. Yeah.
But it basically means that, yeah, if you're starting from a point of retirement for men and women, you know, women typically would have a larger pot, because they're expected to have that retirement income for longer. So actually they need even more to start with. And yet we're starting from a point where they have less. So I agree, that's another factor that impacts it.
And in terms of, so we've spoken quite a lot about lifestyle, but we have seen that women contribute less into their pension. Why do you think that is?
So I guess we've covered a few of those, I think, around the sort of the career breaks and things. And I guess I would say, as part of that, I think it's because, you know, some of it is women, like we just don't have all the information to make informed decisions, I guess. So if I take myself as an example, I've had two periods of maternity leave, and both of those times, you know, I sat down with my husband and we talked through, you know, the impact that my salary would, you know, my salary would reduce over that period. And we thought about the immediate income impacts. I work in pensions, you know, I've always worked in pensions. Did I think about how that maternity leave would impact my pension? I didn't even give it a second thought, you know, it just didn't even cross my mind.
Yeah.
So I think it's things like that. If people aren't aware, you know, I think it's something silly. We did the calculations and it was like, you know, roughly for an average member, if I paid an extra 2% of contributions age 20 for 5 years, then that would offset the 1 year career break that I'd have had at age 30. You know,
right.
And it's things like that. And, you know, someone in our team made a really good point. One of the people that joined our team, and she said, if I'd known the impact that going on maternity leave would have, then I would have paid in extra, you know. Mm-hmm. And it, some people might not be able to do that. But if, you know, how can you make that decision if you don't understand the impact that it might have?
So there's a financial education piece that employers could help with.
Yep.
Possibly even, and this is talking about different policy at all, but I know that, you know, we're coming up to manifesto time, aren't we, and things, but sort of financial education in schools would presumably help that as well, wouldn't it? Sort of, if we could gem up people before they hit the workplace and start saving, then that would really help.
Yeah, there's definitely nothing in my education about pensions at all.
No.
Whereas it's such a big factor of your life, and it's going to affect your life in so many ways.
Yeah, I completely financial education for pensions. I mean, financial education full stop, there needs to be
full
more.
Stop. Yeah.
Pensions, there needs to be more. It's such a huge benefit for people, and, you know, such an important part. And we're seeing people obviously retiring later because they don't have that pension to support them in retirement. There needs to be more understanding generally. So we need to get people, you know, understanding that. And then there's the second layer, which is we've also got gender pensions gap and a lot of other areas where I'm sure there are gaps that we also then need to, you know, build awareness on as well. And it's a very hard thing to do, because I think until you get near retirement age, a lot of people, you know, don't.
It's in the back burn.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I did see quite a lot in the literature about pensions on divorce, and how there needs to, that being one aspect of the financial education, is that a lot of women don't know that you can bring obviously someone's pensions into the pot that you're considering on divorce, and taking financial advice might be really, really valuable for them at that time.
Yeah, I was reading some articles on that recently, actually, and I think you're right. And I think particularly when people, you know, people don't sort of go through the courts, and people, you know, try and do things amicably and mm-hmm. just aren't mm-hmm. even aware that that's part of the,
of the,
you know,
value
the
of the deferred pay of their partner, former
yeah,
partner.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And typically, because, you know, men do have larger pots than women, it's the women that are losing out from that, and potentially could have had more. So yeah, I agree. Awareness of all of that, I think, needs to be improved.
So there's lots of different factors then. And Emma, I want to come on to ask you about what employers can do to reduce this gap. But just before I do, one other factor that Helen and I were thinking about is sort of design of our pension system. So you were talking about women earning less than men, and of course our automatic enrollment system doesn't start pension saving from the first penny you earn. So, you know, it kicks in at £10,000. So because women earn less than men, then it stands to reason that proportionally more women are going to be affected, because they will earn under the minimum threshold for when automatic enrollment kicks in. Therefore the system is designed against women.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I would say, so auto enrollment, I would say on the whole, I think has been good, has been very helpful with the gender pensions gap. And I think we have got millions more women now contributing that, you know, hadn't even started a pension before. But I think,
but millions more men as well. And then to the extent that there is still a gap, the fact that there is that it kicks in from a minimum earning thing is something that feeds into the gap being there. But I agree that it's brought more women into saving.
I think designs need to be looked at. I think, you know, from sort of, I guess, the government, but also, you know, from employers as well. I think there's lots around scheme design that can be more advantageous to men. And I think sometimes when you drill down into it, actually there are other factors at play, and it might not be a gender issue. There's something else.
Yes.
But it's quite hard to know when you haven't done, you know, haven't broken that down.
Yeah.
Okay. So that takes us quite nicely then to what can employers do to reduce the gender pensions gap? You said they have to report on the gender pay gap. What about the gender pensions gap?
Yeah, so I think there's loads of actions both employers but and also trustees can be doing.
Okay.
I guess it's probably not time to cover all of them today, but I think focusing on a couple that are really important. So I think the first one is around analysing your member groups at risk to understand the underlying factors and raising awareness. And we talked about how important it is to raise that awareness amongst the population. Mm-hmm. So I think a key step here is determining which key member groups are most at risk of not getting enough in retirement. So looking at retirement adequacy So gender might be one factor of that, but there might also be other member groups. So things like certain locations, role levels, or something else as well. So I think once you've done that, you can then analyse your gender pension gap. And we talked a bit about how we calculate that. I think, you know, until you've done that analysis and you can know whether there is a gap, and in particular, you know, is that impacting a certain group of members? So is that by age or by job role? You can't really get to work on how you're going to solve the issue. So you can look at, is it salary that's driving your gap? Is it contribution rates? Or actually, is it working patterns? And then you can focus on those and where you go from there. So as an example, it might be that actually you might see changes to your contribution structure, which could provide greater equity for men and women. I guess as an example on that, so we calculated the gender pension gap for a client. So the initial analysis showed that there was a disparity in contribution rates between men and women. But actually digging deeper, we found that the root cause was that low contribution rates were being paid within their low earner population. So there were just more women who were low earners. So actually it wasn't a difference because of gender, but it was because of role level. So actually the company was then able to reconsider that contribution structure to remove some of the barriers that were impacting those low earners. So I think until you've done that analysis, you can't really delve further and understand and actually take action that's really tailored to the people that you want to target. And then, I mean, I think the other action is, and we've already spoken about it quite a lot, is the education piece. And that's something that, you know, trustees and employers can be doing. You know, as we said, people can't be making informed decisions about, you know, how much or when to contribute if they don't realise that their actions could be leading to that gender pension gap.
And even whether to move to a part-time working pattern or whether to go on maternity leave, but maybe to promote shared parental leave more, because then the impact could be a bit more even.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, something we see is called sort of targeted mini statements. So if people are going on maternity leave or looking to move part time, so key life events, sending them a statement which just makes them aware of what that impact might be. And it might be that they say, okay, you know, I've made the decision, that's fine, you know, I understand that impact. Or they might decide, oh, actually, maybe I could pay in slightly extra to top up that gap. You know,
so, or get someone else to pay in. I think that a lot of people don't realise that someone else could be contributing to your pension while, for example, you're on maternity leave.
And I think that's a really good point, because I think it is, you know, it's very much, when you're looking at this, it's thinking about family finances as a whole, right? So I think it might be that you decide, you know, together as part of your family, that this is what makes sense for us. And actually, you know, going part-time, whatever it might be, for the woman to go part-time, that makes sense, and we understand the impacts, and we've thought about that as a unit and how the family finances will work. But if you don't know, you know, I haven't even got an awareness that that could have an impact, it's hard to make that fully informed choice. So I agree, it might be that it's completely the right thing to do, but it's just understanding the impact of that.
Do you think, sorry, picking up on the shared parental leave, do you think that there is a possibility for the gap to reduce because of these kind of policies coming into place and becoming more popular?
Yeah, I hope so. I think we're moving in the right direction. You know, and I mean, I think since COVID, we've seen a lot of employers have generally offered much more flexibility, because they've seen, you know, from COVID that flexible working can work and actually work pretty successfully. And I think that will help with women being able to work more, or men being able to do more of the carer responsibility. So I think we have seen a shift that way. And then I think, you know, the sort of policies such as shared parental leave, they've been coming through in recent years.
It's been a relatively low take up, is my understanding, of shared parental leave since it was brought in.
I think, I guess I've sort of seen from our employer that I think it's on the uptick a little bit. So myself and my husband took shared parental leave, and actually it was brilliant. So I guess firstly it meant I could go back to work slightly earlier, which was great. He got that precious time with the kids, you know, what it's like to deal with the kids at home, but also it meant that we decided afterwards that we were going to go part-time. Both of us were lucky enough to be able to say we're going to go part-time, we're going to be equal carers. And I think the more that we can see people doing that and it become a bit more of a norm, the more it will, you know, it will happen. But, you know, I think we've still got a long way to go. We've got a 35% gap. That's not going to close overnight. So I think there is still more we can do. And as you say, maybe looking at the, you know, the structure of and the design of the pension schemes that we have is another big one. But I think there's some moves in the right direction, but I think there can be more.
And even just from the point of view of promoting workplace equality and addressing the gender pay gap would really help the gender pensions gap.
Yeah, agree. I think that, yeah, if we can sort the gender pay gap, then that solves part of the gender
pension gap. Part of the problem.
And then there's a wider bit. But then, yeah, if women have more pay, perhaps they'll have slightly more money that they could, you know, contribute in, and maybe they could up their contributions. So it makes a lot of sense together.
The lower earners would be much less inclined to contribute to their pension because you need the money now.
Yeah.
So we've talked about things that employers might be able to do to help improve the gender pensions gap, and things that individual pension savers themselves might be able to do. I wonder if, as a third limb, whether sort of a societal level, you know, the government might be able to make changes, maybe to things like these, you know, family leave that we've been discussing, that will improve the pay gap and then improve the gender pensions gap. But things also like, you know, no comment on what is the right thing to do, but sort of more free childcare therefore helps women who want to decide to get back into work, and then that improves their pay and then that improves their pension. Yeah. So there's a sort of three-pronged approach to it, perhaps employers, individuals, and government as well.
Yep.
So we've talked about the gender pensions gap, the gender pensions gap. Emma, are there other types of pensions gaps as well?
Yeah, there are. I think, you know, as long as you've got the data available, you could basically analyse pension gaps for lots of different member groups or factors, you know, anything that you want to, if you've got the data there to do it. You know, I mentioned earlier that you need to really focus on which key member groups are most at risk of not getting enough in retirement. So gender might be one factor, but you might have other member groups such as locations, role levels, ethnicity, or something else. And I think there has been research into the ethnicity pensions gap. So Scottish Widows did some analysis, which, you know, it suggested that most ethnic minority groups are more likely to rely on sources of income other than their pension in retirement. Quite a few have cut back on pension contributions because of the rising cost of living. And actually a significant number more are relying on families to support them in retirement. So there's differences there, again, in how people, you know, approach retirement and are thinking about this. And that's from an ethnicity point of view. So I think typically the gender pensions gap, we know most about it because the information is, you know, typically we have that information. I mean, it's easier to have more to hand. But, you know, if companies and trustees start gathering more information relating to DE&I, then we can also be looking at, you know, what other pension gaps are there and what else needs addressing.
Yeah, I guess absolutely.
Sorry, on the education piece, as you said, there's pension gaps for everything. There's generational pensions gap. And if you do analyse your member population, maybe the education needs to go to the more junior members of staff who come in and it's not on their mind. Whereas as you move to retirement, and maybe you're then more inclined to take up workshops and things about your pension, then you get the reminders. Yeah. So it's really important to know or think about all levels.
And at the earlier ages, you can, you know, if as I said from that example, if I paid a couple of extra, you know, percent
more
in
earlier,
because I've got more time then with investment returns and things, it, you know, you can catch up. I think at the end, it's hard to make good any difference because you've got, you know, you've got a number of less years to be able to do that. So I completely agree. I think the gender pensions gap typically gets bigger around the sort of, I think it's probably as big as maybe around sort of 40-ish, age 40. But actually, when you're sort of between 40 and 50, getting sort of, it's quite hard to make good any difference. And actually, as you say, education from early on, and that might be, again, going back to those targeted communications, it's getting people, you know, early on in the workforce understanding the importance of their pension, little things that they can do. You know, you can send out little prompts sometimes, which I always find it quite useful to say, you know, that coffee that you have every day, if you put that into your pension instead, this is you know, this is what you could have in your pot instead. And it's quite alarming numbers, because that you know, that accumulates up. So I agree, I think the earlier we can get that education.
There are lots of things that will help. For example, when the pensions dashboard finally comes into place, that will be really a wake-up call for a lot of people, and then might prompt them to pay in more.
Yeah. Yeah, the more we can get people talking about pensions, understanding pensions, the better.
Engaging, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that seems like a very good line to finish the podcast on, Emma, because I completely agree with that. Well, thank you for listening to the Burgess Salmon Pensions Pod. It's been a pleasure having you on, Emma. And Helen, I'm looking forward to our sixth and last episode of this series coming out in a fortnight. So thank you for listening. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get access to your podcasts.